We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get insight into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. Now, let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
And it's TCU week. The Mountaineer Insider is on the air. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Glad to have you along as West Virginia looks to get back on the saddle here this afternoon. Back home against TCU. Looking forward to breaking that game down. The Associated Press Top 25 in college basketball is out, West Virginia. And the Big 12, as a matter of fact, well represented. The conference is perhaps in as good a spot as many can remember, at least as far as preseason Top 25 rankings and maybe as far as good teams parity, style of play. It's really elevated the league, I think, into the national spotlight. And we're going to discuss that coming up on the pod as well. We'll also get into West Virginia's defensive line meeting room, and we will pull one guy out of there and talk to Jeffrey Pooler, get to know him as the redshirted senior here. He's made a terrific impact, not only with the previous administration coming into the program back in 2016, but here he is with a couple of degrees, looking to become an attorney, perhaps a sports agent. Really looking forward to following up on some of the things that Jeffrey Pooler mentioned to the media last week. His impact, how he's improved to become such an integral part to WVU's defensive line. Listen, you've got the Stills brothers that are grabbing all the headlines. Hakeem Mezidor, because it was such a recruiting win for West Virginia, as the true freshman is just coming out and making you turn your head. Well, there is number nine, putting up solid game after solid game week by week. Jeffrey Pooler is stopping by. Chris Dorsch of the Blue Ribbon Yearbook is going to talk a little hoops. Really looking forward to that conversation, as I think we have a number of things to get into. How he loves WVU. He's got them in the Blue Ribbon Yearbook as a top 20 team, admittedly probably a little undervalued. And we get into some really, I think, cool conversation as it pertains to WVU just being a tough matchup problem, with most teams being four out, one in, or in some cases five out.
why the computer, as the NCAA tournament canceled in March. You see some of the simulations of how WVU would have fared. Why does the computer love West Virginia so much? These are some of the things that we get into with Chris Dorch from Blue Ribbon Yearbook. Plus, the genesis of this college basketball Bible happening right in Buchanan. The story on that, if you're uninitiated or unfamiliar, it's been told before, but some folks, wait a second, that book, West Virginia, yep, right in Buchanan, so we'll tell that story with Chris Dorch coming up. But directly ahead, John Denton, a former TCU Horned Frog player from the 1980s and a longtime member of the TCU Radio Network, will join us coming up next, and we'll talk about Gary Patterson's team being a typical Gary Patterson team and what is really going to be the great divide in this game. When I say great, it's probably going to be a very small margin for error. Both teams, the history of this series, it's been tightly played. West Virginia has the slight advantage. The Mountaineers going to Fort Worth last year, getting that come-from-behind victory, stealing their fifth victory of the year the day after Thanksgiving, certainly upsetting Gary Patterson that they did not pull that thing out, being favored and whatnot. So we'll revisit all of that, and we'll look ahead to the high noon blast-off on Saturday afternoon. John Denton, Chris Dorch, Jeffrey Pooler, all on deck on this week's edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast.
Today tastes like game day at home. Like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining. And an ice cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola, together tastes better.
And welcome back. Appreciate you joining us and listening to whatever platform that the Mountaineer Insider Podcast comes to you on. And we do ask you, if you would be so kind, leave a comment, give us 5 stars, or if you have any feedback for the Mountaineer Insider, story ideas, we want to hear from you. Just shoot us an email, wvumsn@gmail.com. You can also text us on the MSN text line. It's 304-314-4161. That's 304-314-4161. So that's how you can reach us directly here on the Mountaineer Insider. So if you're listening on Stitcher, on the Apple platforms, that's been huge for us. Help us climb that ladder and spread the old gold and blue gospel. Well, John Denton, he's been all things purple and white over his lifetime and his career as a former TCU player, now as a member of the Horned Frogs Radio Network. And JD had an opportunity to stop by a little bit earlier this week to talk about the matchup coming up on Saturday. All right, JD, good to talk to you as always. Appreciate you stopping by and figuring it all out with us. A couple of teams that are 3-3 amidst everything. I think both programs, wouldn't you agree, have done a pretty good job. We see everything going on in the SEC. Just from a COVID standpoint, we all knock on wood. TCU and West Virginia, all right, these fan bases and these two teams, I think they have a lot of the same principles and guidelines when it comes all down to it. And luckily, here we are playing one another Saturday at noon with a similar situation record-wise as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think you've got to hand it to these teams, and West Virginia's done a great job, and TCU's done a pretty good job. I mean, you talk about team discipline, and normally you're talking about, you know, being to meetings on time and being to practice on time and knowing what you have to do and where to be and knowing the game plan and, you know, getting to where the coaches can trust the players on game day. This is a 24/7 player responsibility. You know, this is discipline around the clock, every waking hour. And, I got to hand it to, I mean, there's a lot of teams around the country that have done a really, really good job with that, because, as you know, it only takes one or two positive tests, and the next thing you know, that thing is growing and spreading. And, you know, we had an issue earlier in the year with our season opener, which was supposed to be SMU, which, by the way, that season opener was our fourth different opponent that we had planned to open the season with. Looks like we still may end up playing them the 12th of December, but that's another story altogether. But, you know, these teams have done a really good job. And, you know, it's weird because, I mean, you've been around it a long time, and I have too. You know, normally this time of year we're talking about, concussions or ankle injuries or knee injuries. And yeah, injuries are still a big part of the story, but the lead every other day, because they're testing three times a week, is okay, how's the team? What are the test results? And, you know, and how many defensive tackles do we have this week? How many corners do we have that, you know, does anybody have it? So I think we've done a pretty good job. Strange for TCU. And, you know, I think there's been a little bit of a psychological adjustment for a lot of these teams because of the limits on attendance. I think the home teams have probably suffered more just because early in the season you expect as a player, you know, you're going to roll out and, you know, the crowd's big and they're making noise and they're in your favor. And really, you know, the Frogs rolled out. They lost three straight at home. And going back to last year, we'd lost five straight at home before the win last week over Texas Tech. So kind of a weird deal. And then we've played better on the road. And, you know, I think, you know, TCU's learned to adjust. Obviously, West Virginia's tough at home. So this is an intriguing matchup. You know, we're a good road team. Mountaineers are a good home team. You know, and I expect it to be, you know, a slobber knocker, physical contest. I mean, we've had some guys in the past take some hits in Morgantown that ended careers. So, you know, it's always been a fist fight.
And is TCU same old TCU from what we have always expected from them? And that's just Gary Patterson locking the clamps down on you defensively, being able to control the ball. I mean, everything seems as it's just business as usual on the field.
Yeah, and it seems as if as we go through the season, you know, that's becoming more and more, you know, the status for this team. I mean, at TCU, it's always been defense first and, you know, try to control the clock and play great special teams. And this defense is finally coming around. At Baylor, they decided they're going to start rotating about 12 defensive linemen. And that's what they did and kept that group fresh. Throughout the game, they'd been playing fewer defensive linemen early in the season, and I think some of the fatigue and wear started to show late in games. They just weren't getting pressure on anybody. Now that group is starting to get pressure, and that's step one for this defense. If Gary Patterson's defense is going to work, you've got to have pressure from your down four, and they're starting to get that. And, you know, the rest of the defense, the linebackers and the secondary are starting to respond and making plays and causing turnovers and a lot of three and outs the last couple of weeks against some pretty decent offensive teams. So, yeah, and on the offensive side, you know, they still want to throw it and, you know, go five wides. And but, you know, they're trying – and some of this is Jerry Kill, the former head coach at Northern Illinois and at Minnesota, who's now on the staff here at TCU. We're starting to see more and more of his influence on this offense. Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham are still the coordinators and are still calling plays, but Frogs are getting a little bit more toothy in the red zone. You're seeing a lot more tight end. And last week, air game just wasn't there. Max Duggan wasn't throwing it well. Texas Tech's got a pretty good front, as y'all saw a couple of weeks ago, and they gave our offensive line some trouble. And so TCU went back, you know, to the basics, went to the run game, went to the quarterback power, and Max Duggan took over the game with his legs.
And how does he get the respect, Duggan, that he deserves? I mean, he's been around him. He's your leading rusher. He's your leading passer. Everybody wants to talk about Sam Ehlinger this, Sam Ehlinger that. When you look at Duggan, I mean, you see some of those similarities. I mean, certainly statistically, but he's that sort of guy that embodies what Gary Patterson is all about, and he's clearly had a big year for you.
Well, you know, I think locally here, he gets his due. I don't know that around the country or around the conference, you know, he necessarily gets the recognition that he deserves. I mean, he took that game over last week against Texas Tech and, you know, had a 48-yard run for a touchdown and an 81-yard run for a touchdown right up the gut and outran two guys from Tech that had angles on him. I mean, he's got tremendous speed. And, you know, I think if the Frogs continue to win, you know, and as the season goes on, he'll get more and more recognition. But, you know, he's, you know, when he's on with his arm, he's as good a quarterback as there is in the Big 12. And, you know, I think everybody realizes, you know, there was talk earlier when the Frogs were struggling, oh, Max needs to sit down. And, you know, Max is head and shoulders above every other quarterback we've got on campus. He is the guy. So I don't know where some people came up with that, but he ain't coming out of the game unless it's just physically impossible for him to play.
You mentioned, and you used the word toothy. I like that, and I might steal it, John.
Okay.
So you get into the red zone, you're going one or two tights. Where are we in the Big 12? It's a conversation that I've had with some other folks, and we've kicked around on our shows. But West Virginia was doing much of the same thing with tight ends against Kansas State pre-snap. Where is this league going? West Virginia played a 17-13 game against Texas last week. What has happened to the league, I guess, that we knew? Because this is a few years in the making, and all of a sudden it's arrived on our doorstep, and it's walked through the front door of our house, and this is, I hate to use the term new normal, but this is what we've got in the Big 12 nowadays.
Yeah, and, you know, I like it. I played back in the 80s when, you know, you still had a lot of wishbone and split back veer, and, you know, running the football was a big part of it. I like it, and I think, you know, Neil Brown bringing it with him to West Virginia, Chris Klieman bringing much the similar type format to Kansas State. Kansas State was always a lineup and just hit you in the mouth, you know, type of offense under Bill Snyder anyway. So not much of a change there. And then at Texas Tech, Matt Wells wants to do much the same. They've got a tight end in the game every play. That big number 15, Kuntz, he will knock into next week. And, they, you know, they're taking advantage of that. So, you know, I think there's a movement back to more balance and more power football. And I tell you, for the good of the league, I think that's where they need to go. Because if you go back just not even to the BCS, just go back to, you know, the last few years, college football playoff era. Look at all those teams that end up in the Final Four, and look at the teams that end up winning the national championship. They are teams that are capable of opening it up and getting big plays through the air. But once they get inside the 15-yard line, they are going to blow you through the back of the end zone. And you look at Clemson, and you look at Ohio State, and you look at Alabama, okay? That's as far as you've got to go. It's a pretty thin cookbook in my estimation. If you're going to compete for a national championship, you've got to be able to get physical and line up and hit people in the mouth and knock them out of the way.
Can TCU do that?
Trying hard. I mean, the offensive line is a work in progress. They finally settled in on a lineup, but I tell you, they've become more of a run game because that's what the offensive line is better at. And you know, they're better at zone blocking and running the read, and you know, they're keeping Carter Ware, a tight end slash H-back, in the game a lot more. And it's more of what has worked. I'll tell you the other thing is TCU's got five running backs that are really, really good. I mean, they've always got skilled people at the receiver position, but you got Zach Evans in there, who was a top five running back recruit in the nation, who originally committed to Georgia and landed at TCU. He's getting more and more carries and getting to play more and more, and he is an elite back. And I think, you know, I keep squawking, and the coaching staff looks at me, you know, side-eye, but I think he needs 20 touches a game. He can catch the ball. He's shown in the screen game that he can catch the ball in space and do some really, really good things. But, you know, I got Darwin Barlow, who's another running back, and DeMarque Foster. Those are all three really good backs that give TCU a little bit different running styles among the three of them, but Zach Evans is the real deal.
How badly does Gary Patterson want this game, considering what happened in Fort Worth last year? Day after Thanksgiving, West Virginia just comes in and, like thief in the night, just steals it, walks away, and it was massive for the West Virginia program. I certainly know Gary was disappointed after West Virginia came in as an underdog and took that one away.
Well, I mean, Gary's one who always, you know, he says you got to go on the road, you got to steal games, you got to take games, you got to bring your own energy, because really it's, you know, pretty much your travel squad and that's it. And, you know, I don't know that he's necessarily zeroed in on this game. He does want to win week in and week out. And I think what I'm sure he's shown video from last year's game to TC to the current team and said, look, these are the things you need to avoid, and here are the things that we need to do better. And one of the things that the Frogs struggled with early in the season was giving up big plays. They gave up the big pass play last year. I think it was Esler who caught the pass that ended up winning the game with about 2 minutes left. You can't get beat deep, and that's something the Frogs have done a lot better job with the last 3 weeks. The first three games, they were giving up huge yards on the ground, gave up big yards to Texas on the ground. I think half of Texas' yards in that game in Austin came on five plays. And, you know, I think they had 400 and something yards. And, you know, so they were just getting gashed and giving up big plays. You know, I think he's going to say, you know what, let's go after this one. But, you know, let's play sound, not get beat deep. Don't give up big plays and don't play stupid.
Are big plays the kryptonite for this team? as we sit here?
They can be. I mean, you know, it's Gary's best defense is always locked down. I mean, the Rose Bowl team, I think they gave up two plays all year of more than 30 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was all about containment and coverage. And they were, you know, that was an elite team. Really, really good. I mean, went and won the Rose Bowl. But, you know, he does not like to give up big plays. He also doesn't like to let the opponent run the ball. And, you know, in this day and age, the way teams are spreading the field, I mean, it's tough to, you know, contain. Sooner or later, you know, a team's going to hit a play here or there. He just doesn't want a rash of them, like four or five, which is what they gave up against Texas. They gave up against Iowa State. And K-State hit some big plays as well. So they've done a little bit better job containing. But, again, it comes back to, I think, you know, the switch up in the defensive line and keeping those guys fresh. And some guys are stepping up as well. They lost Corey Bethley for the year, their best defensive tackle, but they've had some younger guys come in, Earl Barquette, Patrick Jenkins, Kari Coleman, who's a defensive end, number 11, is a freshman. He's really good, quick. He needs to put on about 10, 15 more pounds, and he'll be a lot like Jerry Hughes was here years ago.
What do you think Saturday comes down to? I mean, these teams have always played tight ones. Historically, the series is tight. West Virginia has a one-game edge. What are we talking about Saturday, post-game, keys for TCU? What does West Virginia perhaps do that maybe scares them a little bit? I guess, what's Gary putting on the grease board Saturday pregame?
Well, you know, in my estimation, number one, I mean, you gotta be sound on both sides of the ball. I think these are two teams that have great defenses that are playing really well right now. Somebody's got to control the line of scrimmage. Whoever does that, I think, is going to have a definite edge. And like you were saying earlier, I mean, 17-14 games, I mean, it might be 21-17. I mean, it might be old school. And if, you know, if Letty Brown can play and the Frogs are trying to run it, this game might be over in 3 hours. I mean, this, you know, it might be, you know, running clock, so to speak. But I think it comes down to, you know, who can force some turnovers with some big hits. And also it comes down to special teams play. You got to be really good in special teams, you know, this time of year, because if you're in a game like this, it's a slow down game and, you know, the punters get involved and you're trying to run the football, field position is going to play into it. And that's where the return game comes in for TCU. And that's an area where they've been pretty good.
By the way, as an aside, we were talking about the tectonic shift, right, that has happened in the Big 12. You're calling it more toothy. I just use the word tectonic. Special teams, isn't it just so wild to think of the emphasis? I mean, Neil Brown is a special teams guy. He leads his press conferences off with special teams evaluations. Obviously, Bill Snyder for years and years. Chris Klieman, of course, has that on his checklist. Gary Patterson always has. But we're just seeing this become such an emphasis in the league, and maybe it's the metrics creeping in and the hidden yardage being quantified and being able to actually see the tangible pendulum swing that special teams can be. But is it me, or is this just something that we wind up talking about as a deal breaker, a tie breaking criteria going into every single game, every single week? At least that's the way it is on my radio network. How about yours, JD?
Well, yeah, having been a kicker, number one, I got to give Neil Brown props, because who in the world leads their press conference with
it's
with,
wild.
You know, recap of special teams, which I love. I mean, that's what I did. I got into it by accident and, you know, ended up, that's what I did in college. And it's, you know, it's always been talked about as a third of the game and, you know, this, that, and the other. But I mean, you know, in the old days, I mean, you worked on some facet of it for about two periods during a practice. And then Thursday, you really kind of tried to screw it down tight. And, you know, I think now coaches, I think maybe this is because the wide open nature of college football now and the high scoring and that sort of thing. I mean, especially where the punt game is concerned, both punt coverage and punt returns, that's really your return opportunity these days. I mean, with fair catches on kickoffs and all that sort of thing, the punt return team, I think, is where you can really make some hay and help yourself with not only field position, but scoring. There's a lot of guys that are really, really good. Anytime they touch it, you know, they're catching it in space and they've got a chance to take it to the house. So I'm glad to see it. And, you know, I think if you've got a good punt returner that's got sure hands, you got a big leg punter who can flip the field, and you got a big leg kicker that can hit consistently from, you know, around 50 in, then, you know, huge advantage, you know, for whoever your team is, if they've got those components.
Yeah, I think if a genie appeared before Neil Brown and granted him three wishes, I truly believe one or two, depending on if this would be two wishes, he would like either a straight-up block or some form or fashion of deflection in special teams, whether it be on a kick or on a punt. Just saying.
Yeah. Oh, so. Well, yeah, that's another. I mean, Hogs have blocked a punt each of the last two games, and, you know, all of a sudden that's become something that, you know, it's funny. I mean, you don't see that for two or three years, and then all of a sudden you get them in back-to-back weeks, and now we're thinking, okay, well, how are we going to do that? This, but, you know, a lot of it comes down to, you know, it's on the kicker and the punter. I mean, you've got to get those off quickly. You can't stand around back there and fool around. Everybody's too fast these days and too big. They'll slap it back in your face if you don't get rid of it.
Well, JD, always have loved West Virginia TCU. This series has been a ton of fun to cover, and looking forward to getting you a little Muriels on Friday or Saturday down in Fairmont. Looking forward to hosting you and the Red Beard as well in the University City. So, hey, safe travels to Morgantown. Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us here on the Mountaineer Insider.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hey, bring your mouthpiece and buckle up that chin strap tight. It's going to be a slobber knocker on Saturday, I guarantee you.
Giddy up. All right, perfect. All good stuff from John Denton. Love catching up with JD. He and Brian Estridge do an absolutely terrific job. Up next, we'll switch things up and talk a little hoops as West Virginia at number 15 in the preseason AP poll. Christopher Dortch from Blue Ribbon Yearbook is directly ahead here on MSN.
Today tastes like game day at home. Like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining. And an ice-cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today, tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola. Together tastes better.
Welcome back to the podcast. Looking forward to checking up with Chris Dortch from Blue Ribbon Yearbook. We try to get him on once a year, right around this time before the ball goes in the air for West Virginia's first game of the season. He really likes West Virginia. Everybody, how could you not like West Virginia? But the how and the why this team is going to be so dangerous and such a matchup problem, we get into that. And of course, the Big 12, well represented in that preseason poll. What does 2021 have in store for the league? That's the conversation that I had with Chris Dortch earlier. Well, Chris, always good to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for being with us. And we're going to get to the Blue Ribbon Yearbook story and the genesis for those uninitiated a little bit later on in this conversation. However, everything is out, and everybody has the opportunity to get what is the college basketball Bible, essentially. First, tell me what kind of adventure it was putting this all together, putting it out. COVID has wreaked havoc on a number of different industries from a logistics standpoint, from a financial standpoint. So I'm just curious maybe what you went through to give college basketball fans everything that they've come to expect over the years.
Wow, it was a crazy, crazy time. We usually start on the book in late May or June. And I just couldn't pull the trigger right then. I just had to get more. I'm always been a person that tries to take the sure thing and the sure bet. And so I had a friend who is an associate commissioner at a mid-major, and he was privy to all the Zoom conversations with the NCAA, with doctors, with epidemiologists, with the NABC. And I kept talking to him, and he said, Chris, you got to do it. There's going to be a season. They need to have a season. And then I called my buddy Joe Lenardi, Mr. Bracketology, and he said, man, they cannot not have the NCAA tournament for the second year in a row. So I started leaning toward publishing, but it took me until August 3rd to make up my mind to unleash my writers. And turns out a couple of them had started already hoping that I'd say, give them the go ahead. And what usually takes 4 months, We started August 3rd. We finished October 3rd. And a month after that, we had books and have now mailed out all our pre-orders. So our sales were, you know, cautious at first. I think as readers were kind of getting over that shock of having so many sports going off together, like you'll never see the World Series and the NBA Finals finish within a week of each other again.
It's true.
And now that we're in November, that practice is fired up and schedules have been announced, and we're literally within 2 weeks of the season starting, sales are starting to catch back up. Come to find out, a couple of my competitors, and I would never wish this on them, but they chose not to publish. And we picked up so many new customers, and sometimes I answer the phone when it overflows into my office, and somebody will want to order the book and they've never ordered it before. And I say, you've never seen Blue Ribbon? And they say, no, I'm sorry to admit, I'm a big basketball fan, but I've never heard of it. And I said, I'll make you this promise. If you get the book, you pull it out of that mailer and your jaw doesn't hit the table, I'll give you your money back.
Well, I love that. Love that.
And I want you to call me and let me know. And so I got a call yesterday from a guy. He said, you are right, dude. I'm a customer for life.
Oh, that's terrific. Terrific.
And so it turns out 27% of our business right at this moment is from first time buyers.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome.
You know, we go from, you know, I don't know whether we're doomed to now maybe even making more inroads. So
that is terrific.
Indicative of the crazy times in which we live.
Great success story. Chris Dortch is with us here, editor-in-chief of Blue Ribbon Yearbook. And what did you learn when you got to the West Virginia section? What did you learn when you got to the Big 12 section, Chris? How does the yearbook like WVU this year?
You know, we have the Mountaineers at number 20. And, you know, I like the fact that they're more experienced than they were a year ago, obviously. I like the fact that they've got, you know, in an era where teams are playing four out, one in, five out, Coach Hogg has got a team with Culver and Shebue that is as big and physical as any team in the country. And although obviously you hear about Press Virginia and I really, you know, I can't recall such a total transformation late in a coach's career like Coach Huggins did when he transformed his defense, kind of unprecedented. And he's got, you know, some rim protectors, some guys to clean up. So I think they can defend with greater abandon, and I think they'll be a better shooting club. So, you know, it all to me spelled up to be a ranked team. Maybe we undervalued them. If you look at AP, I think they were 15.
Correct.
You never know really until they get out there and play. But I think Coach loves his team. Like I said, I would take his size. He's got as much quality size in his starting five as anybody, and they'll be able to utilize that now. I think they'll really unleash the defensive pressure, because if somebody does happen to slip through that press, there's these two big, huge dudes at the rim, and you're not going to have a whole lot of success challenging them.
As if they've zigged when everybody else has zagged, essentially. You're talking about four out, one in, or sometimes five out. West Virginia is a true outlier, ergo a true matchup problem, essentially. Such a different look, and of course, being able to do what they do well, particularly defensively, that's just a tough matchup, right?
It really is. The only team that I've seen that resembles this is Mississippi State, and I just talked to Ben Howland on my podcast last week, and he likes to play a conventional 4 and 5 man. And he's like 6'11", 260 at the 5 and 6'9", 255 at the 4. And at least one of those guys, and maybe both, has face-up shooting ability. And but that's the only team that comes to mind that has the kind of size that West Virginia does. And I think that if you've got the ability to protect the rim, but you're already predisposed to press, I think that you can really unleash the hounds, so to speak, and not worry about, the reason I say that this was a courageous move on Coach Huggins' part, especially so late in his coaching career, most power conference coaches shy away from a full-on all-game, 94-foot press, because theoretically every power conference team has got the ball handlers, maybe even elite point guards, to break that press, okay? Well, Bob hasn't been afraid of that, and he's really been able to make it work. But now, with a traditional front court, huge dudes that can protect the rim, you can be even more brazen and even more aggressive with your pressure, because if somebody does escape it, and they will, well, they've got 6'10", 255, and 6'9", 258 to deal with. And that's a unique combination. It really is. And you're right. I mean, Nate Oates at Alabama plays 5 out. They got Jordan Bruner, the transfer from Yale. He's a 6'9", I don't know, 230. He's more like if you've seen his highlight tapes, and I've watched an unhealthy amount of them, he's like a 6'9 point guard. So there's different ways to do this, but I think West Virginia is uniquely set up for a deep run in the postseason, given health and obviously the concerns of the pandemic. I mean, one player could get the virus, God forbid, and your team is shut down. So these are tenuous times. But just looking at it from the lens of normalcy and a regular college basketball season, I think West Virginia's got an enviable starting five and as much strength and size as anybody you'll see.
Chris, you mentioned how they're set up for a deep run, and that sort of just jogged my memory. And I was watching a lot of the simulations, right, when we were in the midst of the pandemic and the throes aftermath of the NCAA tournament being canceled, and the computer, if you will, really liked West Virginia. And some of these sims were just, West Virginia was a Sweet 16 team. West Virginia was an Elite 8 team. That's really making it all sting the more for WVU fans what happened in 1920. Why do you suppose, and assuming that what I just mentioned is true and it is fact, why do you suppose maybe the computer or the metrics like West Virginia, and they would grade out so well in a sim situation, which many believe is truly applicable to what could or would have happened and maybe will happen on court?
Well, I don't know. My theory on that would be that when you're in the NCAA tournament, there's quick turnaround. And you don't face what West Virginia brings at you on a regular basis for the reasons we talked about. It's not commonly done. I mean, think back, how many have really done it and gotten away with it? Arkansas, is one that comes to mind. Another one does not immediately come to mind. So that's a tough prep in a short turnaround tournament situation. So I think that that's what makes West Virginia a potential matchup nightmare. And then, as I said, they can really become aggressive because they've got rim protection.
Yeah, just a total wild card. Total wild card, no doubt. Chris Dorcia is with us, Blue Ribbon Yearbook. Obviously, you look at the AP rankings. The Big 12 obviously had a terrific preseason showing. How do you like the league this year? What makes it so strong, top to bottom, really, Chris, from your perspective? And where does it rank up against some of the other Power Fives at day's end?
I think it's right there. ACC is always going to be there, if nothing else. I mean, obviously tradition, but sheer numbers of quality programs. The Big 12, I think, is, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day. In fact, several coaches, there was an article about how the SEC leads the nation in foul percentage. And I called Rick Barnes and I asked him about that. And, Rick, of course, is at Tennessee, and he was at Texas, and he said, there's no doubt in my mind that the two most physical, hard-playing leagues are the SEC and the Big 12. And part of that has to do with coaches and philosophy and tenure. Rick hypothesized that, especially in his league, there were some older coaches that really liked to stress defense. And if you look at the Big 12 top to bottom, you see that. You see veteran coaches, Scott Drew, Bill Self, Chris Beard, Coach Huggins. It goes on and on. Lon Kruger, Bruce Weber. So from top to bottom, you've got this built-in, we're going to – guard you, and that's going to be a focal point of what we do, and that makes for some rugged interconference play.
Yeah, it really does.
So
it really does.
I think that's why if you look at it, we run KenPom numbers for the last 5 years. This is KenPom's rankings of conferences, Big 12. 1-1-1-1. It's going to be right there again. And I think it has to do with philosophy. And I think it has to do with one thing. Another thing I remember when Coach Barnes made the transition, a couple of his assistants who had come from Texas said, the biggest difference that we see recruiting athletes in SEC country versus Big 12 country is that the kids we recruited in Big 12 country, they grew up playing ball. In the SEC, basketball might be their third sport.
That's a great point.
It could be football, could be track, then basketball, or baseball even. These cats in the Big 12, they play basketball. And that's what they're focused on. And basketball IQs, because they've learned and they've played. And I think that's what year in and year out, plus the physicality and the intensity at which they play. I think that's what makes the Big 12 what it is.
Yeah, no doubt. No, that great points, Chris. As we wrap up here quickly, up against it on the pod with Christopher Dorch from the Blue Ribbon Yearbook, the one and only. Buchanan, West Virginia is the genesis of this whole thing, isn't it? Can you give me the quick elevator speech on it?
Yeah, Chris Wallace, got out of school and noticed that there wasn't really a thorough college basketball preview. And, he wasn't a journalist, couldn't even type, but somehow he created this.
It's amazing.
And within a few years, that had led to a career in the NBA and eventually replaced Red Auerbach in the Boston Celtics. That's just so crazy. And Joe Lunardi and I bought it off of him after he – couldn't focus on it anymore. And then Joe became Mr. Bracketology and it was left to me. So for the last 22, 23 years, wow. And this is our 40th anniversary, I have run it. I have made it into a strictly Division I basketball book. You're not going to find cheerleader pictures. You're not going to find Division II or III or high school stuff. It's all D1. And our book influences the season from start to finish. Coaches buy it to scout. The NCAA selection committee uses it to help frame their tournament at the end. So I don't think there's a publication in all of sports that has an impact like that.
It is content heavy, man. Content heavy. How do folks get it at day's end, Chris? What's the best way?
BlueRibbonYearbook.com.
Easy enough.
It's easy to do. We've still got a few copies left. Like I said, it's incredible how we went from maybe not publishing to being close to selling out.
Here
so BlueRibbonYearbook.com, and day or night, anytime you can order. And if it's the first time you've ever seen it, trust me, you won't regret it.
Oh, you can go down the rabbit hole in a big way, just in conference, let alone the all of the Power Fives and all of D1. Hey, Chris, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All the best to you. That's Christopher Dorsch, Blue Ribbon Yearbook. Get yours today before the ball goes up for West Virginia in their South Dakota tournament coming up at the end of this month. Stand by. We'll return on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.
Today tastes like game day at home, like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining and an ice cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today tastes like watching football is supposed to, and it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola, together tastes better.
All right, Jeffrey, appreciate you joining us here on the podcast. It's kind of been a whirlwind of a year for you, I would think, and it's been a great year. Can you speak to the strides that you've been able to make and what has been the recipe for your success on field this year?
Yes, sir. Mainly, like I said, coming off of last year, I really was getting my feet wet. That's where I really got comfortable. I played a lot of snaps, and I'm not going to say felt around a lot, but you understand the game a lot more, like getting that experience in. So, like, coming into the offseason, I had definite things I wanted to work on, like block shedding for sure. I spoke about it in the last interview I had about focusing on my pass rush and just really being a more productive player with the snaps I play. I play a lot of snaps for our defense, so I want to be a more productive player as well.
What allowed you to get on the other side of doing the things in block shedding and pass rushing? Was it specific drills? Was it just having the game slow down for you a little bit? If you could, speak to those two items in particular, which really has led to the success in those two areas, in the block shedding and being more effective in just getting to the backfield.
Drills come into play. The game slowing down definitely was a huge part for me, but then also like the other things, like the small things in the off season, you get the off season training with the athletic weight room staff and everything like that. And then, but Corona slowed things down right in, so we had to like start workouts on our own a little bit and getting things done. So I had to like keep that same motivation in my head, even though I'm not with my team and everything. Still had to get my work in each and every day, but like so I had to get stronger because like. Shedding blocks, you can work the drills all you want and things like that, but, like, you're going against 300-pound guys and things like that that's also strong. So you gotta work on getting your strength up and just, like, the fundamental parts of it, what parts of the body to attack, arm, wrist, elbow, just weak points in the body and things like that.
What was the hardest part about going through COVID and trying to make progress in the offseason? Was it the mental side, staying motivated, doing your own thing because you didn't have that support system to get you through those weight room doors and put in the quality of work, or was it something else that I'm not thinking of? Because I can only imagine what it would be like in an important offseason and trying to have to do that on your own or improvise and do something in your backyard or at a gym down the street from where you grew up. I mean, you hear so many crazy stories about athletes being able to stay on top of their game, and I'm curious as to how you did that.
Yeah, I mean, it was very difficult during the COVID due to you not having the weight room, the access to use, and not just like your own team weight room. A lot of the gyms around town were closed, so you really couldn't go inside of other gyms either. So it's really a lot of at-home workouts, push-up, band workouts, just jogging around the neighborhood or finding a track to run on. Because you don't have as many things that use like to focus on those things. But I wouldn't say motivation, at least with me. I mean, I've always been really self-motivated. But, I mean, that could affect a lot of other people. But I was always been self-motivated. It's just having the access to things to work with. That was the hardest part for me.
Neil mentioned, I believe it was on his coach's show on Thursday evening, that you're one of the smartest players in the room, certainly on the defensive line front, and that that you don't want a lot of people knowing about that, about how you're playing chess essentially when everybody's playing checkers. Why do you suppose that is about you? That's at least an assessment that your coach made of you on the radio, so I have to ask you about it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's not really I don't want anyone to know about it. It's just like I don't want to feel like I'm a coach at the same time. But I understand the game a lot, and I always really have. I've been playing the same position all my life since I've been like 4 years old. I played on a defensive line. So, like, I mean, I know that you're young. You don't really, like, focus into those things. But, like, after so many years of it, you kind of understand what goes on a defensive line. So I understand a lot what goes on outside of just, like, our defensive scheme, like just recognizing things throughout the offensive play as it breaks down.
So where did you learn the game? Who taught you the game? Experience, as you just mentioned, certainly helps. But there's something that has to help you learn the game, whether that is, you know, watching film or whether that's a certain individual. I'm curious as to what one or both of those are.
Honestly, I probably would put it on a certain individual. Like I said, when I told you I played football all my life, my cousin was my little league football coach. And with me being family with him and his son being on the same team, like we were young and all, so like we just wanted to have fun, go outside, play video games like that. But like he would always bring us in, like all our little league games were recorded and we would watch the games with him and he'd just tell us certain things, talk about other players that we're playing against or we already played against. So, like, we're young, and he just wanted to keep us focused in on things like that, even though we really didn't want to focus in on it. But, like, he stayed on us with things like that. Like I said, that was my cousin, LaRon Turner.
So, did he play at all? What was his background? Could you share a little more about him and how he essentially acquired all the knowledge and passed it on to you?
Yeah, I mean, he played high school football. He played college football. I believe he played one of the HBCUs in Ohio, but he played middle linebacker and he played a little bit of defensive line. And then, like I said, he started up the little league teams and had me and my other cousin, which is his son, and a lot of my friends grew up playing on the same team. So, yeah, he played football. I don't think he played too much further than college, though.
Well, that's all right. He obviously picked up the game quite well along the way, and he's been one of the most influential people in your football life. Jeffrey, where else did you pick up the game from? I mean, talk about some of your high school coaches and maybe some of the folks here that have helped shape you and take that game to the next level.
Yeah, my high school coaches, I played at two different high schools, Chaminade Julien with Marcus Colvin, and then I went to Dunbar High School with Coach Lack and Coach Darren Powell. And then also at my private school, which was Chaminade Julien, my defensive line coach is Coach Freshwater. And he was another guy, like, he would bring not just me, but our other defensive linemen in, like, weekends. He'll probably have a, like, D-line cookout or anything. And we'd just really, like, just talk football. It wouldn't really be about breaking down film or anything like that. He'll just talk football with us and, like, fundamentals and just keep us focused on those type things. It's not always really about the making the plays, because you can't really make plays until you get, like, the fundamentals down in order to, like I told you, defeat blocks and get to the ball.
Big technique guy, are you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm getting better at it, because my focus, like I said, my focus really wasn't on fundamentals, because, like, as you're younger, sometimes you're better than other players you're playing against, and that allows you to naturally just make plays. And I had to get in, like, as I progressed, like, here I had to redshirt everything, because coming into college I was a lot of natural skill, so I had to start focusing more on those things. And best thing you talk about, I still talk to my high school defensive line coach to this day, Coach Freshwater. And then coming to the last staff, there's a lot of with Coach Hogerson and Coach Tall, those guys, we focused on the same things majority. But then when we got Coach Leslie, that's all he worried about is fundamentals. He don't really care about the plays he called or anything like that. That's all. We work fundamentals all the time.
If you have that strong base, right? If you have that strong base, you're gonna be just fine because your natural ability will take over if you are fundamentally sound, especially from a technique perspective, correct?
Yes.
So you graduate last December. You've got your bachelor's degree in sport management. What's next as far as education is concerned? What are you working on right now, by the way, in grad school?
I'm taking a few more finance classes because I've got my business management minor with my sports management degree. So I'm focused on a little more of my financial classes right now. But
what do you
want to
do with those?
I just like the business aspect. Like, you always got to know how to deal with money and deal with business aspect because everything is business, like, once you get your career and everything started. But honestly, I want to, like, once football, I'm coming to an end with my football career all the way, I want to focus more back into school, and I want to take the LSAT, LSAT to get in law school because I do want to get into sports agency business.
Is that something that you've always wanted to do, or when did that come up as a legitimate option and a true passion that you wanted to pursue?
That came up once I got to college. I always, like, honestly, coming into college, I had a few different career options I focused on. I thought about diving into civil engineering. I thought about going into law school just to be, like, never thought about a certain area I wanted to focus on, but I did want to go to law school coming to college. And another thing, I wanted to be a college football coach. So I was never really settled on one thing. I always had a lot of different ideas floating around. And once I started my sports management classes, once I got here at West Virginia, I was taking one, like, the sport law class. And that's when I started thinking more about the sports agency profession.
Is this something you want to work at a firm, or do you want to start your own deal? Take me down the road 5 years from now. Where's Jeffrey Puller at? What's he doing ideally?
5 years from now, I don't know. Hopefully, I still play football. But if that's not what's going on, I definitely want to be, like I told you, the law, either in law school, still have my degree with that by then. And I want to start up my own sports agency company, honestly.
I love it. I love it, man. Hey, congrats to you on the success that you've enjoyed thus far and the success that you're going to enjoy. It sounds like you have a couple of different paths that you could take, and both are pretty darn good. And you've got it all together. And I know West Virginia fans absolutely love to see that and these great success stories sort of play out on the field and off. Jeffrey, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate you. Be well, and we'll catch up again soon.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Well, that'll just about do it for us. Special thanks to all three of our guests, John Denton from TCU, Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon Yearbook, and, of course, Jeffrey Puller. We wish him all the best in his endeavors. Love catching up with him and just to hear the great success stories that come out of this West Virginia football program. Is there a better shining example than Jeffrey Puller? He's poised for some really big things, but he's got a lot of boxes to check, I think, on the football field before it's all said and done, before he's in the boardroom representing some high-profile clients, which we hope he one day will be able to do as a sports agent. Well, airtime, 8:30 on Saturday morning, the Gomard Mountaineer tailgate. So myself, the signal caller, and the Wolfman will get you primed and ready for the noon kick for WVU in this big one between a couple of 3-3 Big 12 teams, West Virginia and TCU. So we hope you could join us on the radio side. You can listen to us digitally, and be sure to turn down that sound on the television. Turn up MSN. Go to syncmygame.com to learn more how you could stream the game through your Bluetooth speakers, your home theater system, and use your DVR and get a perfect matchup so you have Tony Coach Wallace and Jed on the sidelines. And we'll give you the scoop because we are, after all, the broadcasters closest to the team and live at the scene. And we'll be there bright and early, 8:30 Saturday morning, right here on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. And be sure to find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUsports.com. The following has been a presentation of Learfield IMG College.
jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.